Welcome back, everybody, to Talking Stocks. We've got a twofer this week since we had our bonus episode on Monday. So great to be back for the second time this week. Todd, welcome back. How are you?
I'm doing great. I get to see you more than once a week. That's an awesome thing.
What an honor.
I hope everybody enjoyed that interview with Jessica earlier this week. Click on the link if you want to watch that. I think it was really interesting and informative conversation. We're going to try and do more of that, right, Joe? We're going to try and have more people on.
We've got more coming, so stay tuned. It's looking like we'll be recording another one of those interviews on Monday. Stay tuned for more of that. Those are always really fun to do. And it's also really fun to see some of these questions that we've been getting on Twitter and in the YouTube comments. Before we get to that, though, there is one thing that I wanted to bring up, and this is not to instill panic on our viewers or listeners or anything, but it's about the overbought indicator. I believe we brought this up about a month ago, sometime in mid-December, and you had pulled up the chart. Go ahead and pull it up again. I think it's a good visual for folks. But essentially, it's higher than it was back in December. And so, you know, we're not saying go out and panic sell. Personally, full disclosure, I'm not selling anything in the near future, in the next week or two. But it's definitely something to keep an eye on, right, Todd?
Yeah. So, I mean, when it comes to figuring out if things are overbought or oversold and how cautious you should be versus how, you know, if you're willing to take on risks, I like to look at a few different things. I like to look at sentiment surveys. I like to look at the equity put call ratio. I think that that's a good indicator. And I like to look at our own internal indicator, which simply measures the percentage of stocks that are trading 5% or more above the 200-day moving average. When you get the vast majority or bulk of stocks that are trading extended to the 200-day moving average, oftentimes that will signal that we're due for at least a short-term pullback. How big a short-term pullback? Who knows? One of the things that's important to just say as a disclaimer with these is markets can stay overbought for long periods of time. They can stay oversold for long periods of time. There's no, you know, magic pixie dust that we can sprinkle that tells us exactly the top or exactly the bottom or anything else. Basically, the reason I wanted to show this to you is because we have had a really nice run over the course of the last, you know, few weeks, and that's put us up into new high territory again, especially on many of these stocks, seeing a lot of exuberance on Twitter. There's just a lot of things that make me go, maybe it's time for us to do a little digestion. So I'll go ahead and share that screen. And I say this every week, but yes, we are also on YouTube if you want to see these charts. If you're listening and you're not on YouTube, I'll do my best to try and explain what it is I'm looking at. You can see I just have my Excel spreadsheet opened up here with the raw data in it. And I just have a very simple graphic. And Joe, just give me a thumbs up if you can indeed see that.
All good. Can.
Great. You'll see there's two lines on the chart. The blue line shows the percentage of stocks more than 5% above the 200-day moving average. The red line shows the percentage of stocks more than 5% below the 200-day moving average. As you can imagine, they should be, you know, opposite of each other, especially at the major inflection points. And, you know, that's really where we are right now. If you look at this blue line, 77% of the 1,600 stocks that we follow, and again, this is a curated 1,600 stock universe. This is institutional quality stocks. These aren't fly-by-nights. This isn't the Russell 2000. This is just 1,600 hand-curated stocks that we've put together as our universe to base our scoring model on. And it's always being updated. Stocks fall out, new stocks come in, depending on acquisitions and new issues and the like. But if you look at the 77%, and Joe, I mean, what jumps out at you from this chart?
I mean, I remember back in December, we had looked at that on a more, on a more long-term basis. And it was at one of its highest points. You could see along the line going back 10 or 12 years that there had been points where it had, yeah, exactly, kind of where you're pointing out there, where it had gotten into the 50s and 60s. And that's okay. But Yeah, above 70. I mean, that's we're in uncharted territory in the same way that we were back in late March and early April. So, you know, it definitely makes me cringe. It makes me pucker a little bit, you know. But really, my holdings, my thesis has not broken on any of them. And this doesn't change anything in the near term, but it's definitely something to keep an eye on in the next few weeks to a month or so, I'd say.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, we started compiling and crunching the data into this going back to 2013. This is the highest it's been since 2013. If I had it in 2010, maybe we'd see something similar, right? Or late 2009.
Yep.
Following the 2009 March low, that rally, that blow off to early 2010. One of the things that kind of convinced me to continue to put my foot on the gas is I also had gone back and taken a look at where we were 2009, 2010, as far as percentage above the 200-day moving average overall, the S&P 500. And we ran at a 10% or more reading above the 200-day moving average for the S&P for a good solid 6 or 8 months at the peak, up until we retreated, I think it was the second quarter of 2010. So you can run hot for a while. And you know, I think we understand that. The reason that I think that it's important to share this information today, though, is just to remember that no, stocks don't go in a straight line higher into outer space. It's just not the way it works. There is oftentimes backing and filling. There will be some that outperform the market on the retreat, but there will be others that will be leaders that are now so far 50% to, there are some stocks that are 100, 150% above their 200-day moving average, which is crazy. So, I mean, you're going to have some that are going to pull back. If the market pulls back, say 5 to 10%, you could see these stocks pull back 20, 30%. So you just want to be aware of that, listeners. Maybe rein in a little bit of your risk. Make sure that the stocks and the catalysts, the reasons for owning them, you feel good about. Maybe don't be fully invested on margin. This might be a good time to rein in a little bit of margin exposure and maybe be a little bit cautious with any use. I don't recommend the use of it, but any use of short-term expiration calls. So yeah, just a reminder to everyone.
Exactly. Once again, don't panic, but you know, keep an eye out. It's definitely better to prepare for the worst and hope for the best. So with that said, we got a couple of questions, viewer listener questions from Twitter. So first off, thank you for those. Keep them coming. We love answering questions. Frankly, it means that we don't have to come up with ideas ourselves, which is always convenient. So first question comes from Chris Hamilton on Twitter at I am an old blues man. Good handle, by the way. He asks, do you own names on other exchanges too? I've been looking increasingly at EM names lately for greater diversification. So basically, do you own foreign stocks that aren't traded on US stock exchanges?
The answer is no, I don't. I do own foreign stocks, but I don't do it in their local markets. I do it through either the ADRs trading over the counter here in the US or through the direct list here in the US. Or if I really want to get emerging markets markets exposure and I'm not really sure which stocks I want to own, then I would look at something like the, I think it's VWO is the symbol, which is Vanguard's Emerging Markets ETF. Maybe that's a good way to kind of get some backdoor exposure if you're not sure about picking the winners and losers. That being said, I mean, when I do want to own these and I do buy individual stocks, like I own Sony, for example, SNE, you know, I use our ADR ranking for, you know, idea generation. You know, so every week we put out our ADR. It's basically ADRs and direct lists, but anything that's foreign headquarters that trades here in the US, we put out a best and worst list. And that report walks you through, it tells you the strongest to the weakest sector to focus on. It shows you which zones, regions, and countries rank highest to worst. So you know exactly which countries you might want to be focusing on. And then it shows you the actual issues from top scoring to bottom scoring as well. And that's usually, I can usually find a good few ideas in there. And later on today, maybe in the, and as we're going through and doing our smattering of ideas, we'll look, at the ADRs and see if there are any that jump out. But yeah, so so no is the answer, but I do invest in overseas companies. It's just that I do it through either the direct listings or the ADRs.
Absolutely. And we can definitely pull up some of the top picks from that ADRs list later. So next question comes from, sorry if I'm mispronouncing this, Fusco, at Fusco4Real, asks, when does a never sell become a sell? I recently sold NVIDIA and I feel like I lost a loved one. The recent announcement on collaborating with Neo was like a dagger to my heart. Strong words. And yeah, I feel you there for sure. So we've talked about before how you have some what you call forever stocks, and if I'm not mistaken, there are quite a few that kind of fall into that basket. So go ahead, floor is yours.
Right. So I have either forever stocks or what I call rentals. And but when I say a forever stock, I don't mean that I'm literally going to own it forever, right? I mean, Eastman Kodak, Polaroid, those were stocks that were forever stocks probably in the 1970s that you wouldn't have wanted to keep in a forever portfolio. So I'm taking some liberties when I say forever. But it's a great question because we all come into these where we have these stocks and they maybe that's a perennial underperformer for us. You know, it's lagged the market for 6 months, 12 months, 18 months. And, you know, it makes us go, geez, you know, I could have been invested in some of these other ideas. And for a lot of investors, you know, your capital is limited. You know, so if you've got limited capital and it's all deployed and you've got these great names that are, you know, rallying that you are missing, you're missing out on, the temptation then is to say, well, I'm going to sell this laggard and I'm going to buy this other winner because I'm sick of riding this laggard. And I think that NVIDIA is a tough one because I mean, I own it as a forever stock. I continue to own it. You know, there's an overhang there with the planned ARM Holdings acquisition, whether or not that's going to go through or not. And I think that that's really been kind of this lead weight on the stock. So, I mean, I understand the decision to go. I think for everybody's a little bit different. See, my situation is different because I have enough flexibility where I don't have to sell a stock like NVIDIA to be able to raise cash to buy something else. That's a lucky problem not to have. But not everybody's in that same situation. And I think that, you know, one of the things you have to do is you have to say when you buy the stock, you have to outline. I mean, we talked in the resolutions, Joe, you got your notebook and you can jot down, you know, the different things that, you know, about the stock that makes you want to be long it. As long as the catalysts aren't broken and as long as the stock itself isn't broken technically, I'm going to let these things run. So I guess the long answer to the question would be when would one of my forever stocks or never sells become a sell? It would be one of two things. It would either be the catalyst has passed or broken or failed. So something just didn't work that I'd written down as the reason why I wanted to be long and it just doesn't apply anymore. One of the mistakes investors sometimes do is they rewrite their catalyst. So they say, well, that didn't work, but this other thing could be really exciting and bail me out. No, don't do that.
Yeah, so, don't do that.
Right. So if your catalyst busts, that would be never sell becomes a sell, right? The other thing that I would do, and I will hold stocks if they break down below the 200-day moving average, but if you get 5% or more below the 200-day moving average, my warning bells start going off because then I start wondering, what do other people know or see or believe about this stock that could I be wrong? Because price typically leads fundamentals. It just does, right? That's why stocks rise. They're looking out 6 to 12 months, or they fall. They're looking out 6 to 12 months. So if I've got a stock that's in distribution, and definitely if the catalyst is broke, but a catalyst on its own, you know, but if I've got a stock that's on distribution and it's not stock maybe that I super, super love, maybe that would get me to abandon ship as well. But you got to find something that works with your own style, because otherwise, and you have to have rules that you kind of have to stick with, because otherwise you just chase your tail and you can't really adopt mine into your system. You know, it stinks though. I've had the same thing happen when you go out and you sell a stock and you're just, you know, that some news comes out, it gets you all excited about the stock again. You know, there's nothing wrong too, Joe, about buying a stock back.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, all it's cheap. It's free.
Yeah. I've done it before. I did that with, I think I've bought and sold Tesla at least twice. I don't own any now. And honestly, I sold it. I mean, if I had held on to it, I would have basically doubled what was in my portfolio at the time, if not more. But I don't feel bad about it because, you know, I bought like a share at, I don't know, 220 and sold it at 320 and I made $100, you know? Awesome. I have no regrets about that trade at all.
And that's the way you have to approach it, right? It's all about winning. It's all about winning. You got to just, you made your money, you moved on to the next idea. And then if Tesla gets you excited again, then you can buy it again. And then, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, for sure. So I want to, since that last question mentioned NIO, I want to bring up NIO because we've never talked about it on the show. And this company is just really kind of crazy to me. So for those who don't know, NIO is an electric vehicle manufacturer based in China. They've been called, you know, China's equivalent or China's answer to Tesla. I've also heard some crazy stuff about how they're following their investors, their you know, vehicle owners, etc., are like even more cult-like than Tesla's following. So I want to, and obviously this chart is ridiculous. So
emblematic. I mean,
is there anything behind this rise? Is this just crazy, stupid Wall Street bets hype?
You know, it's funny when you start looking at these things, you see $3 stock way back in April and May, and now it's a, you know, it touched $60 last week, which is just insane. But it didn't do it all in a straight line. I mean, you had $3 to 16 digestion, back to 21 digestion, to 22, up to 25, big spike up to 58, retreat, big spike up to 65 or something like that. So, I mean, it certainly gave investors plenty of opportunities to go in. You can see the volume rising steadily along that whole shift. And then down here, you can see the moves up originally had preceded, kind of. I mean, you said the April, so that's Q2. So that's the QT data from April to June. You can see where it's kind of flatlining and then starting to get it a little bit excited as we go into June. And sure enough, in that second quarter, quarter end in June, sales were up 140%. And then people came out of that earnings report and started to rally it up again. And then, and sure enough, in the third quarter, and the stock ended somewhere around 25 then at the end of the third quarter, and sales were up 155%. So, you know, there's a couple of things to think about here. One is, do you trust Chinese companies, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you had Luck and Coffee, and you've had other examples of kind of like shenanigans, with financial and stuff. So, you know, do you trust them? But let's assume that, you know, NIO's financials are fine. And if you make that assumption, then you say to yourself, well, okay, can this continue? I see no reason why not. I mean, it's a huge market for automobiles over there, and they have the same issues that we have here. I mean, there's a big need for reducing the use of, maybe even more so, you know, because they import a lot of oil, reducing the use of fossil fuels. So electric vehicles are going to become a much larger piece of the pie, if you will, in China. Maybe some more competitors. And of course, Tesla also sells cars in China, and there's some other players as well over there. One of the things that's interesting about NIO, Joe, they have these cafes, and you can go and you hang out in the cafe while they swap out your battery. So rather than relying on a charging, you know, infrastructure where you're sitting and you're charging for, I don't know how long you have to charge for.
Yeah, half an hour, an hour.
Yeah, or whatever it is. I mean, you could just, you go in, you get your cup of coffee. It's kind of like getting a change your tires or something.
Yeah.
you know, swap out your battery. So I think that this is interesting. It's an interesting concept. That obviously the revenue is through the roof, and you know, with the stock pulling back here, I don't own it currently. I wish I did. Obviously,
I think
I think if I can buy it in the low 50s, actually, like a test of this 21-day moving average, because it's right above the 50, I would probably take a swing at it there with a quarter, with maybe a third of a position. So my normal position would be, let's say I don't like having more than 5% in the stock. My normal position is about 3%. So maybe I try 1%, put it on in the low 50s, maybe like 51, 50, something like that. And then see where it goes from there. If it breaks down and falls down, then I would look for other support levels maybe to put it on. Or I might even just punt it. I have to take it a data dependent on that one. But so that's where I come down on NEO right now, Joe.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you there. Like, it's, you know, the fact that they're a Chinese company and there might be a lot going on behind the scenes that we don't hear about in America is concerning. But also, I mean, those growth numbers are just they're too big to ignore. It's somewhat similar to Tesla in a way where you're like, oh my gosh, this is outrageous. They can't sustain this, and then they do. So, you know, it's worth a look for sure. And there's Tesla's chart too for those keeping score at home, just continuing their absolutely meteoric rise.
Yeah, and actually, that just there's a we'll get to it later on, but this is another China-based manufacturer of hybrid full power vehicles, Boyd. It's also been a big winner.
Yeah, there. Yeah. So speaking of stocks that have had a meteoric rise, let's take a look at GameStop, because that I looked at that. I don't remember now if it was yesterday or Wednesday. We're recording this on Friday, but the stock was up 64% on the day. Now, that's something you might see with a penny stock, but GameStop is a very well-established company. And so I think I had brought this up on the show a couple months back now, about this potential short squeeze and, you know, what the heck is going on here, because it had started off, you know, you can see on this chart, $3, $4, $5, maybe $6 a share going back to like last summer. And then all of a sudden it was up to 11 and just insane amounts of volume every single day, up and down, like total roller coaster ride. And here we are. The stock peaked at over $40 a share this week. So what's going on, Todd?
You know, it's crazy to think that the thing could go from $3 or $4 to 22 and then climb another 60%.
Right.
It's not like this thing was just flatlined at $3 and all of a sudden jumped to 6. You know what I mean? It's like this thing had already gone from 3 to 22 and then jumped 60%. You know, this is actually... shameless plug here for the research. The research nailed this stock. You know, the scores jumped to a buy rating in August. So if you look at this chart, you see how we're trading back in here in August around $4 or $5. And then the end of August, you had this big jump in volume here and this big run up where the stock went from, you know, $4 to almost 8, almost doubled. The scores jumped to a buy. Now, in those kind of situations, this is one of the reasons that I'm always looking through the scores, trying to find new ideas. Now, you as the investor, as the consumer of the score, you need to decide whether or not it's a stock you're willing to put in your portfolio. You certainly could look at it and say, wow, there's a lot of reasons that I wouldn't want to take the chance on GameStop, because they're betting on a recovery as far as a pivot in their business, a pivot that is unproven. They want to take their physical stores and somehow leverage them into a digital model. And we don't fully understand even how that will happen. What happened was that one of the founders of Chewy, which of course is a very successful e-commerce digital company of pet supplies, had taken a stake, an activist stake in it, and a fairly substantial activist stake. And since then, I think they've gotten some people on the board of directors that are ex-Chewys. And they still maintain a relatively large piece of that pie. I don't know what the eventual outcome will be for GameStop. Maybe it's they're looking at the fact that each individual console, PlayStation and Microsoft and Nintendo, has information on the gamers, right? But those are siloed to each console.
Yeah.
So who would have, who has the best demographic understanding across all platforms? Who has that?
A few years ago, it probably was GameStop. Now,
they probably still do, though, because I mean, think about how many people still are in GameStop's system. They may not be actively shopping at GameStop today, but they are part of GameStop's history, right?
Right.
Who knows? Maybe there's in some way they're looking to try and use that. They're looking to try and pivot towards maybe some sort of a curated gaming platform where they can tap into esports, they can tap into other things. I don't know, right? Who knows? That's for other people to figure out. But I think that one of the things that's interesting about a stock like this is when you see a stock jump in score and join our best list, at least then you have the opportunity to say to yourself, is this a stock that checkmarks the rest of my boxes? If it doesn't, fine, you walk away. There's always other ideas, right? But at least you would have had the opportunity in August to have had that discussion with yourself on GameStop. And now with a, you know, trading at 40, it's no longer, it's not buy rated. It's dropped to a hold rating. It has been for most of the move since December. It's just been a hold rating. So it's not telling you that you have to, it's not giving you the same signal it was back in August. So I think here you just sort of sit on your hands and you just say, okay, well, lesson learned for next time.
Yeah, I do find it pretty interesting, though, that the score has not dipped or, I guess, plummeted to a sell rating given the price spike.
Well, remember that the research model itself, the way that we look at valuation is in valuation relative to itself. So GameStop's historical PE and, you know, relative to its forward PE ratio. And that's a small, much smaller piece in our model than money flow, potential earnings growth, all these other pieces of the puzzle. So a spike in price alone, because we really do subscribe to the idea that winners win, a spike in price alone won't cause the score to drop.
All right. Excellent. So with that, there's honestly so much to cover this week. We could do a whole nother episode and have plenty of content. I do want to talk about, we can make this brief if you want, but I want to talk about politics aside, as always, we're not a political podcast, we're an investing podcast. But it's important to note that basically all of the major social media platforms now, Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat, Instagram, YouTube, you name it, have banned Donald Trump, the president of the United States. Now, we're not going to talk about the political implications of that, but there are definitely some investing and some stock implications because Twitter's price, for example, has really been skidding ever since they made that announcement. So I find that kind of interesting. I'd love to hear why you think that is. It might be fairly obvious. It also might not be.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, I think there's gamemanship about engagement on the platform, right? I mean, it's all about your monthly active users, right? So when it comes to these social media platforms, I mean, that's how they're marketing themselves to the advertisers. Look how engaged our user base is, and look how that engagement is growing. And you really want to make sure you're advertising on our platform because we're reaching so many people that you want to be targeting. So I think that there is a calculus that's going on right now where people are saying, if people basically look at this and say, wow, this social media has become such a quote unquote cesspool that I just don't even want to be involved. I don't want to engage. I'm going to pull it all back. I'm just not going to go on every day, or I'm going to switch to, you know, some of these other more smaller, more niche kind of groups or whatever to have those discussions. What does that mean? What would that mean for monthly active users? What would that mean for Twitter and Facebook's ability to go out and, you know, continue to bring in advertisers? I think for the most part, while it may create some destabilization in those figures, it's probably healthier for the platform long-term. And the people who stay engaged are probably going to be the ones that advertisers are going to most want to be targeting later on. So I think that anything that we see right now is going to be a hiccup that and resolves with a better, stronger company down the road. Now, if we just go on and we look at I'll share my screen again. If we just look at Twitter, let's see here. Yeah, this is what Joe's talking about. You know, this 56 move up to all-time highs, kind of banging its head around, then this high volume sell-off. You know, based on what I just said as far as my belief that any kind of disruption in engagement is likely to be shorter term in nature, if we get down here into the low 40s, I own Twitter already. I am not selling. It's a long-term hold for me. I'm up over 100% on the name. I have no interest in selling it. I would take a look at my weighting on it and see if it's something that I would want to increase my weight back to a normal position if it had fallen below. I probably won't do that though, just because, again, you know, I already own it and I'm already up a lot on it. And, you know, sometimes, I mean, stocks go up, stocks go down, as a mentor famously told me 30 years ago, you know, don't worry too much about trying to explain a drop or trying to explain an increase. But if you were new to the idea and you were waiting for an opportunity to buy Twitter, I would say, let's see how it does here. If it gets down to these low 40s, maybe take a swing on it then. I think Facebook is actually a little bit more attractive right now. It's sitting right on its 200-day moving average. As you can see on the chart, just pulled that up. And I think that Facebook has other, where Twitter is limited to, I mean, it has other parts to Twitter, but Facebook has relatively big parts. It's got Instagram, which still has pretty high engagement. Yep. Relative to Facebook. It's got WhatsApp, it's got Oculus, it's got other things that move the needle. You've got 22% year-over-year growth in most recent quarter. You've got 12% expected EPS expansion in 2021. And you're sitting right under your 200-day moving average. So of the two, I think it's Facebook that I would probably most like to put an entry in here. And then I would probably stop myself out if I got more than 5% below the 200-day moving average. Oftentimes that happens and you'll get a rally back up and then a roll back down. So if it gets down like 7% or something like that from this entry here, then you can just take it off the next time it rallies and say, I'll just wait until all the overhead resistance clears itself out.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Facebook, because I've been thinking about that stock this week as I've watched it kind of slide, and I know a lot of folks on FinTwit have too. I'm looking for a good entry point myself. So I see you just pulled up Snap as well, which
I figure we ought to take a look at Snap as well.
Might as well, the trifecta.
They were the last ones to say that they were going to be deplatforming President Trump. And you see, they are actually growing even faster, 52% year-over-year revenue growth, still losing money, though, and you've got a gap to fill here. Typically, you don't always have to fill gaps, but oftentimes gaps fill. So if I was new money, I'd go back to Facebook.
Yeah, totally agree. So this has been somewhat of a long-winded episode. So why don't we cap it off with just a quick smattering of stocks for the week. If you want to bring up some ADR, since we were talking about it earlier, that would be awesome too.
All right, great. So let's do that. Let's go. I'm going to share my screen. I'm going to take you to Seeking Alpha. Seeking Alpha is where you can get access to Limelight's top stocks for tomorrow service. If I click up there, that brings me to the top stocks for tomorrow site. And you can see we have our different reports that come out, including the reports that came out today, best and worst ADRs, best and worst large cap stocks, best and worst mid cap stocks, and best and worst small cap stocks. And if we just click on the ADRs, you can go through here and take a look at some of them. You can see that the top rated sector right now in ADRs is consumer goods. That's probably not too surprising, because we were talking on last week's show that consumer goods is strong in large, mid, and small cap overall. The best countries are Taiwan, and that's mostly semiconductors, right? Driving that. Canada and Mexico, interestingly enough. So you got the North American trade going on here, Canada, Mexico, and of course the United States. And then among the highest scoring, auto home, which, you know, is kind of like a platform for providing auto insight in China. Sony, which I mentioned earlier, is a stock I actually own. And Grupo Aero, which owns some airports in Mexico. And then we go into here and we talk a little bit about the top ranked sectors. I said consumer goods. You can see that the AmBev, you've got some beer plays there, Heineken as well, Sony, which we mentioned. And then if you go down here, oh, this is an interesting stock with Adidas. So let's take a look at Adidas real quick. You can click on Adidas. You can see how the stock has kind of retreated here from, you know, the 200 towards the $175 area. Very interesting, you know, given the fact that we've seen a lot of strength in footwear stocks over the holiday season. And you can sort of go through here and you can see, you know, just looking at them, that they're expected to see their EPS jump from $1.09 to $5.19 over the course of the next year or so. So maybe that's a stock that you would want to look at in the ADRs. Let's see what else shows up here. You can see consumer goods and industrial goods would be the top ones. And then if you look at zones here, Taiwan, Taiwan Semi, you know, you United Micro. So, I mean, you've got a lot of the semiconductor stocks in Taiwan are strong. Let's see, Mexico, Switzerland. Lanza is an interesting, LZAGY. You know, they're kind of like, they manufacture a lot of drugs for other companies. So a lot of the inputs, you know, for those companies.
COVID vaccines too.
Yeah, yes, exactly. So Lonza is a name here that you might want to take a look at. Let's see what else we got here. And it was one of the reasons I love having it on this system site, because you can click through on any of these hot links and be able to get whatever information you want out of them. I see Logitech up here, right? Logitech's probably going to have a really good quarter because of the holiday sales system and all the computer upgrade cycle, et cetera, for both consumers and for businesses. And then when you see the list here of the best and worst actual stocks ranked descending, the ones in yellow, Joe, just for everybody who's listening, those are the ones that made the biggest jump in score for the week. So I oftentimes will go through here and just say, okay, are any of these interesting? Of those, NetEase, NTES, was one that jumped to mind. And you can see here how you had that nice little run, kind of that saucer, and you can make it like kind of maybe a cup of the handle. Again, I'm not a technician, but I like to use technicals to help me with my entry and exit points. So, you know, again, this is a company that's involved in, it's a Chinese gaming company for like online games and stuff like that. So that's a stock that you might want to do a little bit of due diligence on and see if it's interesting to you as well. So, you know, that would be a smattering in the ADR area, Joe.
All right. Very nice. So I'm going to make the executive decision to cap this off here, because this is going to take forever to upload on Ski Condo Wi-Fi, but I'll make it work. And yeah, we will be back on Monday with Simon Erickson. Is that right?
Well, we're hoping to line up Simon. He's willingly been generous enough to offer his time for a conversation. We're going to try and nail him down sometime next week. So if we don't get him Monday, we're going to try and get him on the show as soon as we can. And I know that there's a few other people that I've had relationships over the years with that I'd love to get on the show and talk about different things. So hopefully we'll have some good things to say next week, and we'll keep all our listeners posted.
Absolutely. Yeah. Stay tuned for that. With that, have a good weekend, everybody. Take care.